This is the SF Productions Podcast Network. How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, Episode 131. Can a comic collector of 20 plus years get his wife to read them? Will she let him keep them? Learn more in this podcast. Let's go to the comic book lounge with Mindy and Mark.
Well, thank you, AnnouncerBot, and welcome to How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. I'm Mark.
And I'm Mindy. Just as a reminder, we have a Facebook fan page. Just search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts, and blogs, or go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, where you can leave us a review.
And you can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com. Finally, you can call the voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
I called the voicemail line this week.
Yeah?
Because you wouldn't answer your other phone.
Apparently. Batman, Return of Bruce Wayne, number 6 of 6 from Morrison and Garbett. As expected from Grant Morrison, it's completely incomprehensible.
Exactly. Completely.
I'm wondering if anyone in our audience, maybe you already take powerful hallucinogens, or if you're willing to do it and then read it, and then you could explain to us what the heck happened. Wow. We've got references to hyperfauna, time spheres, and gotcha. And somehow, supposedly, it all makes sense, at least in Grant Morrison's mind.
I know he's a big superstar of the comics industry. And apparently people buy what he writes.
Right.
But does anybody really like it?
Hmm.
Does anybody understand it?
I think as we talked about last week, this is one of these writers that no one's allowed to edit him. No one's allowed to say, no, maybe that's going a bit too far.
Because this certainly is not a comic that's going to pull readers who are not comic readers in.
No. So, at the beginning, there's references to a gun and pearls, which all makes sense because that's the whole thing when Bruce's parents were killed and there's a gun involved and the pearls fall from Martha Wayne's throat. But I don't understand the bell at all.
I know.
Does it represent he's calling Alfred? Is it represent him? I don't get it.
I didn't get any of it, so...
So we have the old standby of let the person die and the parasite leaves bit where you then resurrect that person. You basically put him into
restart
brain death.
Restart his heart.
Yeah, after a couple minutes. The strangest thing about all this is that Time Masters, the series that is going on parallel to all this, has 2 more issues left.
Yes.
So I don't know where that all fits in. Also, never explained where the insider suit came from. I was hoping to have at least some reference to that. At this point, I'm glad it's over.
Yeah, and I'm seriously crossing Grant Morrison off my list.
Yeah.
I don't care if you get them, but mm-hmm. I'm probably not going to read them unless you specifically request that
right.
I do so.
Yeah, I can completely understand that. Justice League Generation Lost, number 13, by Winnick and Bennett. So we see Magog on this rampage, and I thought he went to Albion in the last issue of his series, and yet he still seems to be around. So Max convinces Magog that he was ordered to kill Captain Atom, and he's got something changed in his lance that sends out this radiation that Captain Atom has trouble with, and it's killing everybody else. And it also is actually killing Magog. And so the radiation burns out the memory block on Magog about Max Lord.
Mm-hmm.
And then he ends up realizing what he's done, and he sacrifices himself. So Max apparently completes the mission for the White Lantern.
Which sort of makes sense, you know, killing Magog or getting rid of Magog.
Make sure the Kingdom Come can't happen.
Yes. But I don't see how convincing him to kill Captain Atom was necessary.
Yeah, exactly.
And apparently is Max just going rogue? He's using the White Lantern to also further his own plans.
Or is there a larger plan that he has that he thinks he's saving everyone by turning the JLI into criminals. Everybody in the crowd thinks that Captain Atom killed Magog.
Right.
And meanwhile, Captain Atom's not going to be able to defend himself because he's thrown into the time stream again by all this energy. So I'm hoping at least next issue or very soon we'll see where he went. Knight and Squire, number two. So this is more British wackiness from Paul Cornell.
Just as an aside, I was reading this at school this week, and a kid came up to me, and I had it open on the desk.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, oh, it's Batman and Robin. So I think that they're getting the idea mm-hmm. that this is the British mm-hmm. Batman and Robin
right.
across, even to people who don't read the comics.
Well, I think that's the goal. So the town of Great Worden, where the castle is for Knight and Squire, they know who they are, apparently. The people in the town know, but they keep it a secret. Some guy comes into town, comes into the shop, and is like, well, we have no idea what you're talking about. And,
yeah.
and they're in London. What are you doing here? So there's a Avengers reference in that Knight calls Squire and says, we're needed, which is the term they used in the Avengers show. Squire has picked up a copy of Total Castle magazine, and they have a mock-up of the front cover at the end of the issue, which is very funny. There's this whole thing about the Morris men, and they have an explanation at the end of the issue. There's a whole page of text that basically explains some of these references, and this is about these people who kind of like were a dancing group, but they then got into more political stuff later, and...
Yeah.
Oh, the other reference was a reference to Anastasia, because he actually holds up this cloth to his motorcycle, and the motorcycle apparently has auditory sensors and picks up the scent. And Anastasia is Dan Dare's spaceship, Dan Dare being famous British science fiction hero.
Yes, and this is a very, very British comic.
Oh, absolutely.
So much so that at times it's almost incomprehensible.
Right, right. But at least, unlike Morrison, they actually have a little answer key at the end.
Right. And I can understand the story. I really understand what's
right.
happening, even
right.
if I don't understand,
you don't understand
some
the
of the
references.
References.
Yeah. Booster Gold. So Ronnie, the kid from the future that Booster saved, goes back in time to World War II. And
kind of sneaks back.
Sneaks back. And then Booster has to go back to get her. And Booster runs into General Glory. So General Glory was introduced in the JLI era, actually in 1991, as a Captain America parody. This character apparently went the whole Captain America route where he was in the Arctic, and in this case, he agreed to retire instead of getting locked in a block of ice as Captain America did. So as an old man, he can still become the young Captain Glory, similar to Captain Marvel, really, where he just changes and is young again. But one of the times he changes back as an old man, he has a cardiac arrest, and he hands the role to his successor just as he dies. And this successor was actually killed by neo-Nazis at his wedding. I think this was in one of the JLA series. So because he theoretically died in action, they include Captain Glory in the JLA memorial section, you know, like where they have this statues of all the various JLA members who've died, and he's one of those. So General Glory keeps running through sidekicks who
Ernie.
Either go nuts or get killed. Yeah, Ernie, the battling boy. And they just keep feeding him sidekicks, and they don't last very long. So Booster discovers why Ronnie came back in time, because she keeps seeing Booster trying to fight Maxwell Lord. And she realizes, well, I'm going to go tell Max Lord's mother on him and say, yeah, you should watch your kid.
He's being bad. He needs a spanking.
Exactly. And throughout this issue, Booster's starting to use time travel more intelligently. At one point, he's like, okay, well, we need to figure out the best way to get through these Nazis. And so he just goes ahead in time a little bit till the Nazis aren't there and figures out the layout of the place, figures out where everything is. Gets to the end of, you know, what he's trying to get to, and then whips back in time, knocks out the Nazis, and takes the thing.
mm-hmm.
Which I'm like, okay, you know, that's kind of what you should be doing with time travel. You can work around those types of things. Thunder Agents number one. Now, this is based on a Tower Comics series from 1965 to 69. This is during the period in which, because of the Batman TV series, everybody was coming out with a superhero comic book. And so these guys came out with this comic book. Kind of inspired by Man from U.N.C.L.E., in this case, in terms of the acronym. And it's kind of heroism as a day job, where you kind of clock in and out as a hero, and then the rest of the time you're not. So after 1969, it had a huge impact on future writers and artists, because by the 1980s, everybody wanted to do a Thunder Agents title. So John Carbonaro had a company called JC Comics. Now, again, let me step back for a second and say 1983-84 in that period is really kind of like a mini golden age of independent comics. Because of the changes in moving from newsstands to comic book dealers, there were boatloads of independent comic companies. Hundreds and hundreds of companies were generated, most of which came and went very quickly. And so this one, Carbonaro apparently got the rights somehow, and the characters ended up, instead of being under his title, ended up under the Archie Red Circle titles. There's also a reference to a Texas Comics one-shot in 1983. Then, this other company in 1984, Deluxe Comics, thought they were in the public domain, that Thunder Agents were in public domain. Well, they weren't, because Carbonaro still owned the rights, and he sued and officially won the rights to the characters. 1987, another company, Solson Comics, did one. In the 1990s, Rob Liefeld, of course, of Extreme Studios and one of the architects of Image Comics, he claims the rights, and he actually paid Dave Cockrum to do a series. He paid him in advance to start writing this new Thunder Agent series, but mysteriously he later canceled the project, probably because he realized he didn't really own the rights. So 1995, Carbonaro then takes the same characters to Penthouse Comics. There was only one issue. In the 2000s, DC licensed the rights from Carbonaro, and then two issues were completed. Actually, the work was done, but never published. And apparently, Carbonaro didn't like the direction DC was taking. They were really making a radical change to the characters, and he kind of pulled his support, and they said, okay, we're not going to put these out. But DC did publish six archive editions, reprints, of the original Thunder Agent stuff.
Did you read those?
I did not. But the archive editions were the hardcover.
Right.
Yeah. So then we make it to 2009, and DC announces the new series with Nick Spencer and Kafu doing the artwork.
Okay.
So the concept here is that there are these people who basically have come into a dead end, and they want to get out of their own lives, and this organization gives them the opportunity to get out of their own lives and become these heroes. They're given powers, and they fight for this secret organization within the UN, but the powers will eventually kill them. Eventually will just burn them out.
If they don't get killed in combat apparently.
Exactly. If they don't get killed in combat. So we'll see where this goes. I'm suspecting that DC really wanted to initially align this with the whole Red Circle thing because of the tie into the Archie comics back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
But that has all pretty much, other than Mighty Crusaders, all fell by the wayside. That's just not happening. So it took them so long to get this thing out, it's now going to have to pretty much be on its own. And we'll see, again, if it takes off or not.
Well, they say that this Thunder is this super ultra secret organization, which explains why you would never have heard of it before,
right?
Maybe. I don't know.
Right.
But.
And it's unclear whether this is in the mainstream DC universe.
Ah.
I mean, there was nothing specifically that said that. I mean, it makes reference to there are other superheroes, but these guys take care of the stuff the other heroes won't do.
Yes.
But it doesn't say references to DC characters. Kind of like the first issue. I did like the artwork. In a way, I think it's a little bit of a limited concept because you really shouldn't get too attached to the characters because characters will probably die pretty quickly.
Yes.
So you're more attached to the hero than the character playing the hero.
Because they do keep the same names going for
this
people with the powers.
Right.
I think the interesting part might be not the heroes and the action itself, but the recruiting of the people. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, I mean, that actually might be a more interesting piece of it than the actual fighting, because it's more, really, it's more generic superhero fighting than anything else. All right, so before we get out of here, I think it's time to play America's fastest growing new game show.
Guess who's on the cover of Entertainment Weekly? Are you ready, Mark?
I'm ready.
All right, I'm pressing my button. In just a minute, you'll hear a beep.
There it is. TV related?
No.
Movie related?
Yes.
Movie that's coming out?
Yes.
That hasn't come out yet?
No, it has not come out yet.
Not come out yet. And is it some big movie coming? Or they think it's a big movie?
Probably.
Is it a sequel?
No.
So it's, is it coming out this, between now and the end of the year?
Yes.
Okay. Is it a drama?
I think so.
I think so. Okay. Is one person on the cover?
Two people.
Two people. Man and a woman?
Yes.
Are they over 50?
No.
Over 40?
One is.
One is. One is over 40, and is the other one significantly younger?
In their 30s.
Okay. I'm guessing the younger one's the woman?
Yes.
Okay. It's a drama.
I believe so, although it could be action-based also.
Action-based. Is it genre-related?
No.
No. So it's not like spy-related?
Well, there wasn't a whole lot of information on the movie.
Is the cover more about the actors than the movie?
Well, you'd certainly recognize the actors before you recognize the movie.
Okay.
Which was really not a yes answer.
Right.
But.
Let's see. Is the man dark hair?
Yes.
See, in his 40s, and the girl is a blonde?
No.
Or a redhead?
Not normally.
Not normally.
Well, you know these actresses.
Yeah,
they
that's
constantly
true. That's
dye
true.
Their hair.
Oh, and I'm done.
You know, it's really weird, because I have not heard of this movie. It's called The Tourist. Does that ring a bell for you?
It's not George Clooney, is it?
No.
Okay.
It's Angelina Jolie and Johnny Depp. So it surprises me that I have not heard of this movie.
I have not heard of this movie. And it's coming out between...
December 10th.
Which tells me it may not be a very good movie if they're putting no publicity toward it. And, you know, this close to December 10th, for those two biggest stars to be in a movie.
It's just weird. And like the IMDb... synopsis of it is like two lines.
And I'm wondering, I'm assuming this is assumed Oscar bait. I mean, coming out with a drama in December generally means you're trying to get in under the wire for the Oscars.
Perhaps, yes. Although it's a little even early for that. If it, yeah. I don't know.
So just a reminder about that Facebook fan page. Search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics. Go to sfpodcastnetwork.com for the feed, other SF podcasts and blogs, or you can go to iTunes and search for How I Got My Wife to Read Comics, and please leave us a review.
You can contact us through the website, Facebook, or email sfpodcastnetwork@gmail.com, or call our voice line at 614-321-9737. That's 614-321-9SFP.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye.